from my heart, from my mind, from my strength, I will worship you.
1 Samuel chapter 17, we've seen the nation of Israel go through this transition from the time of the judges, where there were these men that God worked through, called, that weren't kings, but God worked through them. God helped the nation to kind of get their act together. And we've moved now into the time of the kings. Saul was the first one anointed to be king. But through his continued disobedience to God's commands, God told Saul that he's no longer going to be king. Now, in fact, he's kind of told him in a couple of different ways. It still hasn't happened yet because he's still king. But God's warned him that he's going to lose the kingdom, that his son's not going to take over, and he's got somebody else in mind. And in the meantime, old Samuel snuck off on a secret mission, and God led him to this young man named David, a man after God's own heart. We pick it up in chapter 17, verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle. Let me get a swig of water. They gathered their armies together to battle and were gathered at Socoh, which belongs to Judah. They encamped between Socoh and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah. And not like the movie that came out. I don't know what the movie it was that came out. There was a movie a couple years ago called The Valley of Elah. It's something about an Iraq war thing or something. I don't know. That's nothing to do with this. In case you saw the movie, I didn't. Okay. So Saul and his men were gathered together and camped in the Valley of Elah and drew up in battle array against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side with a valley between them. So the Philistines are gathered together. Now, we've already seen now a couple of wars that have happened between the Israelites and the Philistines. Both Samuel and Samson fought the Philistines. And then we saw most recently in chapter 14 that Jonathan and his armor bearer started in an important battle which led to a major victory over the Philistines at a place called Michmash. And that was something like 27 years or so before this battle that we're going to read. So there's been a little bit of space of time between that battle and this battle. It's been a little while. And the Philistines are ready to battle Israel again. They kind of begun to lost some of their grip over the Israelites because they were the occupying force. They were the ones who were trying to control the world in their world. Now, it mentions these places, Socoh, Azekah, Ephes-Damim. This is an area about 15 miles west of Bethlehem, which is where David is from. And I just mentioned that because David's a part of this story. Let's see if we can kind of identify these places. So, let's see, can I read this? Okay, so there's Bethlehem. Here's Jerusalem over here, and just popped up there is Gibeah. That's where Saul is from. And Socoh is off to the left, about 15 miles from Bethlehem. And all these places that we were just read about, there's Socoh. Azekah is going to pop up here on top of this hill. It's not quite as easy to read it on my computer. Ephes-Damim is down in this valley, and this valley here between the hills, this is the valley of Elah. And the Philistines will be on one side up on a hill. My guess is that the Philistines are going to be here and the Israelites are going to be over here. And why do I say that? Because if you see, this is a creek bed. At least this is where the creek bed is nowadays. And most of the year it's dry, except in the rainy season. And because it's a creek bed, you can find there lots of... What do you find in empty... creek beds, dry creek beds, stones, smooth stones,
right? Because that's what's usually at the bottom of creeks. You got your rocks that are all smoothed out. It says, verse 4, and a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines. The word means literally a man between armies. And the idea is they're going to set up a contest. And and instead of the armies facing off, they're going to have two men face off. A champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath, or Goliath would be the way we should pronounce it, but I'm going to say Goliath because that's what we all say. He is from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Cubit is the length between your elbow tip and your top finger. That's a cubit. A span is from your thumb to your pinky. So he's 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head. He was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Josephus says that he would carry it because it was so heavy. He would carry it across his shoulders. That's the idea of this javelin. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. So this fellow's from Gath. We've already seen there's Gibeah, Bethlehem, and Soko. This is the valley right here where they're at. Gath is just down the road. It's about 7-8 miles away. And it says that Goliath is 6 cubits in a span. That puts him somewhere over 9 feet tall. This is probably, 10-foot ceiling, you think? Maybe 12? I don't know. Anyway, he's up there. Let's put it this way. Andrew Bynum is 7 feet. So Goliath, compared to Andrew Bynum, is about like that. He's 2 feet and 9 inches, 2.5 feet taller than Andrew Bynum. Darnell, I don't know if you know who Darnell is in our church. Great, great guy. He's our gentle monster giant guy that's in our church. He's huge. He seems to me like he's 9 feet tall, but I think he's only like 6'4" or 6'5", or how, is he taller than you? He's about 6'6", and you're about 6'8"? That means Goliath is 3 feet taller than you, Frank. That's big. That's very, very big. Says, what was his armor weighed 5,000 shekels. That's 125 pounds of armor. That's just the armor that he's carrying. That's not him. His spearhead, it says, was 600 shekels. That means the head of his spear is about 15 pounds. Put that into perspective. Think of a nice size bowling ball, one of the heavier ones, 16 pounder. You shape that into the spear head. That's just the head of the spear. That's kind of scary to think about this guy. Verse 8, and it says, he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, why have you come up? Okay. Don't want me to do voices? Why have you come? We should do some like tweaked voice or something. Why have you come up out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And you, the servants of Saul, choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. It's winner take all. One guy wins and the other nation becomes slaves. In a way, it's kind of cool because then you don't lose 20,000 men. There's a good thing about that. The bad thing is that if you hold to this and you lose, that kind of is not great. That's not the best thing in the world. Of course, you're going to see that like the Philistines are really going to keep their words. They're not really going to keep their word. But verse 10, and the Philistines said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, I don't know, do you remember who, you know, if this is a battle for height, do you remember who the tallest guy is in Israel at the moment?
Saul.
Said he was head and shoulders above everybody else. So I would think if I was a lowly private in the army, I would be thinking, so I guess this is Saul's day, isn't it? You know. But it says he's dismayed and greatly afraid, and he keeps to himself. He doesn't raise his hand. He doesn't volunteer. Now, David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah. Ephrathite, it's another name for Bethlehem. And his name was Jesse. That's David's dad. And he had 8 sons. And the man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul. So Pop is getting up there in age. The 3 oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to the battle. The names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. Now, we've already seen these guys, because these guys were part of the group that lined up in front of Samuel when he was picking out who would be king. David, verse 14, was the youngest, and the 3 oldest followed Saul. So the 3 oldest are in Saul's army. They're out on the battlefield. But David, verse 15, occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. Now, it gets confusing if you miss some of these verses. In the last chapter, it sounded like David was working for Saul. Remember, after he got anointed, then Saul had that episode where he was having these troubled spirit things, you know, evil spirit thing that was bothering him, and he was having this freaking out, and they decided to find somebody who could play good little guitar, you know, and David played the harp, and whenever David would play, it soothed him. And so it says that back in chapter 16 that David kind of went to work for Saul, and whenever Saul had these fits, David would play his guitar, and Saul would mellow out. It also said that Saul loved David. And it also says that David became his armor bearer. But here we find out that every once in a while, he still had to go back and do what Dad told him. Dad would send him notes and say, son, I got some chores for you. I still got some stuff. You know, you never took the trash out last week, you know. And David's the youngest kid, and he's just kind of bouncing back and forth. He still has chores at home, verse 16. And the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening, every morning, every evening, for 40 days, over a month, every day. Goliath challenges the Israelite army. Then Jesse said to his son David, see, apparently David wasn't around when Goliath first showed up. Jesse said to his son David, take now for your brothers an ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves and run to your brothers at the camp, which, remember, is about 15 miles away, and carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000 and see how your brothers fare and bring back news of them. And so now he's got another job he's got to do. He's, you know, has just been feeding the sheep and sweeping things out and taking out the trash. Now Dad says, now go, your brothers need a new supply of food. You kind of see how the armies were supplied this time. Families would send they would send decent care packages to feed their soldiers for a while. And David is dispatched to feed his older brothers. And it's kind of a good thing that Jesse sends him, because baby brother is going to do something pretty important. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. So David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with a keeper, and took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him. So he's got that 15 miles to go. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to the fight and shouting for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army and came and greeted his brothers. I mean, this is kind of pretty cool. It's like it's like the beginning of a football game, you know, and the teams have run out of their locker rooms, you know, on the field, and the announcer's announcing things, and everybody's all excited and stuff. And So David drops off the supplies, and he goes out to greet his brothers. Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the big guy, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same word. So David heard them. Now I imagine back in those days, probably the average height is might be 5 feet, 5'2", something like this. So a guy that's 9 feet tall, he's almost twice the size of everybody else. And imagine what the armies, you know, every time, I'm sure they could never get used to it. This guy steps out from out of the midst of the army. Of course, they could see him. He sticks out. He spoke according to the same word. So David heard the challenge, the daily challenge. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter, and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel." So they kind of lay out what has become known as the rewards. Saul's trying to make it worth somebody's while to take this on. And the promise is some money, a girl, and no taxes for your whole family, for your dad's family. The whole family gets off with the taxes. That alone was enough, right? That alone's pretty cool. Keep in mind the tax thing, because that comes up. That's important at the end of the story. Yeah. So the announcement is made. Verse 26. Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him in this manner, saying, "So it shall be done for the man who kills him." So they lay out the, you know, the money, the girl, and the taxes exemption. You win the princess's hand, all that kind of stuff. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. He hears his little kid brother. You know, he could be 10, 15, it's eight brothers, so he could be 10 years older than David. And Eliab's been around. He's the guy that impressed Samuel with his stature, and he was a together guy. And his little kid brother is asking these questions. And Eliab's anger was aroused against David. And he said, "Why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness?" I mean, buddy, pal, you've got a job. You have to learn to do your chores at home. And I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. Kid, you just want a thrill. You just want to charge. I know your pride. This is sounds just like an older brother. Does anybody in here have older brothers? Yep, some of you have older brothers. It kind of sounds like an older brother, doesn't it? Sounds just like an older brother. And it could be, we don't really know. I wish we knew the tone of the voice, because it could be that he's just out to protect his brother. And he's thinking the kid is going to get himself into trouble. He's always getting into trouble. We've nicknamed the kid Danger Boy because he's always getting himself into trouble, always jumping off of things, always trying to fly and all this kind of silly stuff, you know, the kid, you know. And so maybe just being harsh to kind of just, you know, get the boy back where it's safe because he's trying to protect him. It could be that maybe David has a little bit of an attitude. He's the youngest brother. He always does get bailed out of trouble by his older brothers. He does try to jump off the cliff, and they're always at the bottom of the cliff to catch him, you know, because that's what older brothers do. So who knows exactly what? His brother says, "I know your pride." And there is a little bit of something to think about here, gang. His brother's being a little overprotective, and I think, well, that's a good thing. But my goodness, David is going to be the one who defeats Goliath. And if he paid attention to his brother, he would have gone home. And so in a sense, there is a little bit of a lesson here, a little bit of a caution about maybe being overprotective. Jesus' own family didn't understand him. I find that amazing. In John chapter 7, it says even his brothers did not believe in him at one point. At one point, they
kind of didn't have it figured out what he was trying to do. At one point when the crowds, there were just huge crowds starting to gather around Jesus, and the family was kind of like scratching their head going, yeah, but if you heard how he snores at night, I mean, what do you do? What is this all about? You know, and they know Jesus. And it says, when his family heard what was happening, they tried to take him away. He's out of his mind, they said. They said that about Jesus. I look at that and I think, what? Wake up. But that's just who they were. And Jesus was the older brother. Sometimes there will be some very good, loving people who will try to keep you from things that you ought to do. They might mean well, but we need to know that sometimes they're overreacting. It's not to say bad older brothers, stop this, but just know that's going to happen. Sometimes, gang, we're those people. Sometimes we try to overprotect our kids. I remember the first time one of my boys wanted to drive up to L.A. for something, and I remember just panicking. I was like, are you kidding? I'm not going to let you drive to L.A. But I got over it, and I stayed up, you know, to all hours waiting for him to come home, freaking and panicking, you know. Well, today the youngest drove up to L.A., and I thought, oh, okay, just call me when you get back, you know. It's like, you know, we are so silly the way we sometimes are a little bit overprotective. It's hard to let your kids take steps of maturity, isn't it? And yet sometimes we need to do that. That's something that's happened. That's one of the under things that are happening here with David. Verse 29. So David said, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? I mean, can I just ask some questions? Jeez, Eliab, get over yourself, you know, please. Then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing. He asked the other guy, now you tell me, well, what is this all about again? And these people answered him as the first ones did. Now, when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul and he sent for him, because David is sounding like, well, why not? Why can't we? God can do this. And word about this gets out. Saul hears about it. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Now, I have to tell you, the first 30 times I read this story, I didn't have it all put together. And I used to think, well, you know, here's this unknown person talking to Saul, and Saul doesn't have a clue who he is, because you're going to get a thing at the end of it where it almost sounds like Saul doesn't know who he is. But he knows him. He does know him. The last chapter, we know that very clearly. He knows him. He loves him. He's been his armor bearer. He's his music man. He's the guy who soothes the beast inside of Saul. He knows him. And so when David makes this plea, this is not an unknown person. This is somebody that Saul knows. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. I mean, gosh, my gosh, this guy's been in the NFL for 10 years. He's 300 pounds. And you haven't even got, you know, who do you think, what's going on in your head? And David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. Yeah, you still do, buddy. Used to keep, that was like yesterday, I used to keep my father. Isn't it funny how we change these stories around? I used to. In my job history, I have the, you know, a long time ago, I used to keep sheep, like this morning. But he used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord, or you notice, did you notice this all in capitals? You notice it's all in capitals. What does that mean? That means it's Yahweh. That's the name Yahweh. Yahweh, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and Yahweh be with you. David says, he will deliver me. I just want to think about this for just a few minutes, the idea of training for victory. Don't look at the, again, I have to tell you, I thought some goofy things about this story, and I'm sorry. Don't think about this victory with the lion and the bear as a small thing. I mean, are you going to go fight a lion and a bear with first century, with 1000 BC weapons? You know, a stick and a club and a sling or something? Would you do that? I wouldn't do that. Oh my gosh. You must be crazy. So fighting a lion and a bear are actually pretty significant things, aren't they? But they're just training. They're just part of David's training. God has been training David and getting him ready for this challenge by Goliath. David will write later on in his life, he will write Psalm 144, blessed be the Lord, my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. God trains me. God equips me. God makes me ready. We, none of us like going through trials in battles. But hopefully, with each difficulty that we get through, we should be realizing God's training us. God's adding a few more skills to our skill set. He's sharpening our weapons a little more, maybe giving us a few more tools. The battles aren't for nothing. The battles are part of our growth. It's part of our training. And right now, when we look at the story, we try to apply this David and Goliath to our lives, I'm thinking, I'm going through a Goliath right now. I am facing Goliath. Absolutely right now. And that's fine. Totally fine. I don't want to take that away from you. But it could be you just got the lion right now. And there's more ahead. And you need to learn the lessons now of what you're going through. Because God's training you. God's maturing you. He's sharpening me. He's helping me to grow. I was thinking the other day about how I think, I don't want to sound proud about this, but I think I've grown a little bit in how I handle conflicts. I was thinking about this over a couple of different things over the last couple of days about handling conflicts and how I'm kind of doing it differently. In the past, I've done a really poor job at handling conflicts. Not that I've got it down now. But in the past, I tend to get offended. I get hurt. I lash out. I say stupid things. I respond too quickly. I have to pull my foot out of my mouth. You know, all those kinds of things. And not that I still don't do it every once in a while, but I think I'm doing it a little bit less. And I've noticed a couple of opportunities where I felt like I was in a battle. And I bit my tongue. And I tried to show grace. And tried to understand the situation. And oh my gosh. I every once in a while I still get these fears about, oh, this is going to blow up like that certain situation, you know, a long time ago. And you know what? It doesn't have to do that. Sometimes I can learn new skills because I faced the bear. I faced the lion. And he trains my hands for war, my fingers for battle. I especially like the fact how I really like this, how his confidence isn't even in his own skill. If you read what he's saying, his confidence is in God.
That's a part of his training. It's not just like, Saul. Let me tell you, buddy, I just killed 5 giants last week. I mean, you know, I can knock off the giants, you know, all the time, you know, and no problem. I got it. I'm cool. I'm with this, buddy. No. I've had some battle experience, but I'll tell you what, God can do it. I really like that because I think that's one of the areas where I want to grow in confidence. I want to grow in confidence of God. I may not be able to pull this out. I may make mistakes, but I am confident of this very thing. Paul said in Philippians 1:6, I am confident of this one very thing, that he who began a good work in you, he will complete it. God wants to do the same thing in us. Verse 38. So Saul clothed David with his armor. Saul put his own armor on David, and he put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them. So David took them off. Now, I have to confess that when I read this, I am usually thinking of a little kid wearing his dad's clothes or something like that, that he's just lost in it. And it might be somewhat that, because we know Saul's big, but David's like 16, 17 years old this time. He's not a little boy. He's got a man's body. I'm pretty sure of this. The point, when he says, I haven't tested, he hasn't tested it. He hasn't learned how the new gear works. He hasn't tried his battle moves yet. And you don't try battle moves out for the first time on the battlefield. You want to, you know, we're all, those Angel fans of us, we've been all amazed at Albert Pujols. Oh my goodness, what an awesome player he is. And they, one of the things that I'm just fascinated with is that he is a hard worker. Oh my gosh, he's a hard worker. He's one of the first ones at the training facility in spring training. And one of the things they talk about is that he does what children do. He hits off of a tee every day, like T-ball. You know, my kids with a T-ball. And he goes back to the tee. Every day, a couple times a day, he goes back and hits off of a tee because he's refining his skills. He's working on his swing. They call him the machine. Isn't that what they call him? The machine, because he is so exact. So he did the same swing every time because he practices, because he works, because he trains. And so this concept of David saying, well, I haven't tested, I don't think this is an excuse. I think he realizes, this isn't me. And that's the lesson, gang, is that we need to learn to be ourselves. David knows how to fight. He's killed lions and bears. He's had a reputation as a warrior. Before he got the job as the harpist for Saul, remember what they said about David? They said he is skillful in playing, a mighty man of valor, a man of war, prudent in speech, handsome, and the Lord is with him. This guy has a reputation as a fighter. He's also known as Saul's armor bearer. So if anybody knows how the equipment works, the armor bearer should know how the equipment works. It's not like, gee, what's this big long pointy thing? I don't know what it is. Well, he's the armor bearer. He's probably the guy that sharpens the sword. I mean, he knows this stuff, but he isn't familiar with it. It's not his thing. David is not Saul. Saul's armor is made for Saul. That's the lesson we were talking about on Sunday, about learning to sing our own song. I don't know if you were here Sunday morning, but it's the 144,000 sing a song that no one else could learn, because the concept is that we all have our own songs, and I've got to learn my song. I can't learn your song. I can't live your life. You can't live somebody else's life. We can learn from other people, but ultimately we have to learn to be ourselves. I have to fight this my way, with my weapons. Verse 40. Then he took his staff in his hand, got a stick, shepherd's staff, And he chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook. So remember that there's this creek bed running through the valley. And he put them in a shepherd's bag, in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand. And he drew near to the Philistines. So he goes to the creek bed, picks out five smooth stones. It's a great place for finding smooth stones. The stones there are smooth. Smooth stones come out of a sling better. That's why you use smooth stones, because it'll come out better, more accurate. Why five? It has been suggested because Goliath had four brothers. One for Goliath and four for his brothers. Could be. Timothy and I visited the Valley of Elah 5 years ago on our trip to Israel. And I'll try to talk over this. We don't have the sound working on the computer in the back. Right now it's playing the beginning of the Rocky theme. There's Elah. And this is what Elah looks like. We're walking down towards the creek bed. In fact, actually, this is the creek bed right here. You can see some of the stones. Here's the sides of the hills on either side. Here's the other side. No, that's still the left side of the valley. I'm guessing that that's the side that Israel's on. I'm thinking that the Philistines would be on the other side because David has access to the creek bed. Walking along, Rocky. Think of Rocky music. And there's Timothy, Bill Gallatin. And at one point, we stop, plop ourselves down. Ronnie Cohen on the right, that's Ronnie, he's one of the tour guides, and he's going to give us a lesson on how to sling a stone. He was pretty good at it. He was very good at it. So we'll have to wait for Ronnie to sling his stones. Sweetheart, did we go to the Valley of Elah? We did, okay. I was thinking that maybe we picked up stones there, didn't we? Yeah, I think we brought home some. Yeah. But this was the year before Deb and I went. Okay, here's Ronnie slinging some stones. You'll get a sense of what a slingshot works like. Don't think of the two things of pulling back rubber thing. This is a sling where you've got a long strip of leather with like a leather pouch. You put the rock in the pouch and you hold the two ends of the thing and you swing it around and you let go of one of the strings and then it goes off. Ronnie will talk about how the Roman army employed slingers, they called them. And they wouldn't use stones. The Roman army would make a little football-shaped lead weights that they would use for projectiles, because then they could like a football, you know, as when you get a spiral off of it and it's got it you can kind of it's easier to track the course and all like this. And Roman soldiers were so good at this, the Roman slingers, that if they were besieging a city, they could stand off hundreds of yards away and pick off the guards on top of the wall. So this is an amazing weapon that was used in ancient days. You could see the sling a little bit closer. And I want to wait because he asked for volunteers. See if anybody else wanted to give it a try. And one of my good friends, Terry Dawson, his son, Jacob, was on this trip with us. And Jacob's going to volunteer. This is going a little bit long. I apologize. Okay, there goes Jacob. Okay. This is not an easy thing. So this is, I think, Jacob's first time at trying this. And what? Now in slow motion. Now you'll get to see what he did. And I slowed it down. Now I only had my little cheapo camera. That's why it's not very high quality stuff here. So it's, we're going to slow this down. And and around and around, and he lets go, and it comes right, and it hits me. That's the last thing. That's the last thing the Goliath saw. I have a new appreciation for Goliath. I never thought I would identify with Goliath in this story, but after that year, I have a new appreciation of what Goliath went through, except I only got hit on the hand and he got hit in the forehead. So, okay, you have a little taste of Elah. Verse 41, let's go back to our text. Verse 41. So the Philistine came and began drawing near to David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. So keep in mind, a lot of pictures that people draw, they've got big Goliath and little David, you know, facing off. But there's a third guy. Goliath has his own shield guy, not just an armor bearer. This guy, just his job is to hold the shield for the big guy. So he carries the little portable wall around to protect Goliath. And so verse 42, and when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. He just, this is stupid.
Me face this little kid? Ho, ho, ho.
So the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come with me with sticks. Remember, David has his staff, his shepherd's staff with him. He does have a stick. And the Philistine said to David, come to me and I will give your flesh. I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, and don't do a Porky Pig voice. You. This is not David. He says, you come to me with a sword and a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of Yahweh of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. I come to you in the name of Yahweh, Lord of hosts. In David's mind, the name of Yahweh is stronger, a better weapon than Goliath's sword, his javelin, his spear. Now, I don't know about you, but do you think that about God's name? You know, a guy is sticking you up at the grocery store or the bank or whatever, and he's got a gun to your face. Do you think that the name of God is more important, more potent in that weapon? David was convinced of this. We talked on Sunday about the 144,000 having the seal of God on their forehead, the name of God. We talked about Proverbs chapter 18. The name of Yahweh is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. The name of God, a powerful thing. David says, this day Yahweh will deliver you into my hand. And I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there's a God in Israel. This isn't going to be David doing this. It's going to be God doing this. And Goliath threatened to give David's body to the birds of the air. David says, no, 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 no. I'm going to give the whole Philistine army to the birds of the air. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. This kid is nuts. This kid is absolutely nuts. David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. So what am I going to do here? I got to finish this guy off. So David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword, drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled.
He killed him. He killed him. He faced the giant. And the giants in our lives are those things that just, well, they're the big things, aren't they? And it kind of tends to be whatever we're facing at the moment tends to look like a giant. I think some of the things that make the giants the worst is the fear inside of us. There's a story about a certain man who was troubled with dizzy spells, and he went from one doctor to another, and nobody could tell him what the problem was. And he tried everything, it seemed. Finally, it was bothering him so much, he was losing weight, he couldn't sleep at night, he was a nervous wreck, his health began to deteriorate. He had lost hope that he would even ever recover. So he decided to prepare for the worst. He made out his will, he bought a cemetery plot, made the arrangements with the local undertaker, and he was convinced he was going to die very soon. And he even decided to buy a new set of clothes to be buried in. So he goes to the clothing store, and they fit him out for, you know, he buys shoes, socks, pants, coat. He asked for a size 14 shirt as well. And the clerk said, but sir, you need a size 15 and a half shirt, not 14. But the man said, oh, no, I wear a size 14. Finally, the clerk said, look, if you wear a size 14, you're going to have dizzy spells. And see, gang, sometimes the Goliath is Goliath, and he's 9 feet tall, and I get it. But sometimes, I got to just tell you, in my life, sometimes the worst part is the fear. Sometimes that's the worst part. When the Israelites sent out the first spies into the Promised Land, the thing that kept them from going into the Promised Land was their lack of faith. They didn't go in, it says in Hebrews, because of unbelief. And their lack of faith, I think, was cultivated by their fears. The report came back, and the report was, there's giants in the land. And these people will devour us. Joshua and Caleb had it right. They tried to encourage the people. They said, if the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. And you know that it would be Caleb. Remember this from our, this was back all the way back in Joshua, wasn't it? Where Caleb was the one that got to face the giants. And he was 80 years old by that time, 85 years old, and he still faced the giants. When you face your giants, you need to remember that you've got somebody bigger than the giants to help you. You need a big God. Now, if I ever film the story of David, not that I'm ever going to do that, but if I was to be the director on the movie, I would do it something like this. I'd, from David's perspective, and I'd look up at Goliath, and then I would pull back. I'd zoom out. So much so that you're looking down at the valley. And then you kind of zoom out from the valley. And you see a little bit more of the land. You see all the land of Israel. And you keep zooming out. You see the continents. And you then really pull all the way back into outer space. And you realize that it's all in God's hands. You've got a huge God. And he's the one who fights for us. And if we could only grab a hold of that sometimes, at least the fear changes. God's the one who's big enough to hold the whole world in his hands. That's what Isaiah 40 says. He measures the oceans just with the palm of his hand. Verse 52. Now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley and the gates of Ekron. So the Philistines are in full retreat. They're just running flat out. Maybe they've got they go as far to the valley to the gates of Ekron, and the wounded of the Philistines fell along the road to Sha'arim, even as far as Gath and Ekron. Here's the valley of Elah. Here's Azekah that we saw. And if you can zoom out a little bit, off in the distance, there's Gath, and here's Ekron. And so they're going to run all the way to the road to Ekron and to Gath. And it's like 7-8 miles. And the Philistines are in retreat and the Israelites are winning. Verse 53, then the children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and they plundered their tents. So they went back to the Philistine camp and they got all kinds of cool souvenirs. I think they had Philistine iPads that they picked up. They got some really good, cool stuff. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, and he put his armor in his tent. And when Saul saw David going out, that's quite a souvenir, by the way, head of the Philistine. I wonder what he kept it in. Abner, when Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, Abner, whose son is this youth? And Abner said, as your soul lives, O king, I do not know. And the king said, inquire whose son this young man is. Now, here's where it gets confusing, because you read that and you think, wait a second, I thought he knows him. I thought he was his servant. I thought he was his armor bearer. I thought he loved him. I thought he was the harpist. He should have known the guy. That's not what he's asking. He's not saying, who is this kid? He wants to know who his father is. Why? Because part of the reward was that you go free from taxes, and in fact, your whole father's household goes free from taxes. So he just wants to know what the tax implications are for the victory that's being won here. Who am I going to set free from taxes? I think that's what he's doing right here. Verse 57, then David returned from the slaughter of the Philistines. Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? So David answered, I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. Let's see if we can do another chapter. Now when he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Now, gang, there is nothing impure here. The homosexual community likes to pick on this verse and say that they were gay lovers or something like this. That's so far from the truth, it's not even funny. Can you understand why Jonathan loves this kid? Because he's just like him. He's just like him. He's got the same faith that Jonathan has. He's willing to step out and take steps and do things in the name of God that no one else wants to do. Remember Jonathan's battle where he and his armor bearer, remember they climbed up the cliffs and they challenged the whole Philistine army all by themselves. He's just like Jonathan. Oh, Jonathan looks at this kid. He listens to his heart. He hears words out of his mouth and he goes, ah, I love this kid. This kid is great. Verse 2, Saul took him that day and would not let him go home to his father's house anymore. He says, kid, you're in the army. And that's it. You're not going home. You're done with sheep duty. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, even to his sword and his bow and his belt. So he takes off his own robe. He gives David all this stuff to David, his own sword, his own bow. And remember at one point back in chapter 13, there was only two swords in all of Israel. It was Saul and Jonathan were the only two guys that had swords. And I don't know if that's changed. That was a few years back. But right now, Jonathan gives David his own sword. And I think there's a couple lessons here. I think there's one of humility. I think Jonathan is demonstrating his love for Saul by sharing his own honor with him. He's the crown prince, for Pete's sake. He's the guy who's next in line to be king, and he gives him his robe. Oh, my gosh. There's also the part that David, frankly, is a poor shepherd kid, and he doesn't have stuff. And Saul's going to put him in charge of stuff in the army, and he doesn't have stuff. And so he helps to equip him for battle, for war. So David went out wherever Saul sent him and behaved wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servant. There's something likable about this kid. Everybody seems to like him. And I'm sure they're probably thinking, what's not to like about a kid who's willing to face Goliath? He was willing to do what none of us would do. Now, it happened as they were coming home when David was returning from the slaughter of the Philistines, that the women had come out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. So the women sang as they danced, and they said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. So this becomes kind of like one of the top 40 hits of the day. Everybody's singing the song. It's a catchy tune, you know, it's Friday, da, 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 or whatever the top is on YouTube. It's everywhere, you know, this silly song. And it's one of the top downloads of iTunes. I mean, it's just hitting all the charts. Saul is known for killing his thousands, but David, 10,000s. Now, in reality, gang, in reality, we think this is a bit exaggerated. Yes, it was a big victory, huge victory. Josephus doesn't always get his numbers right, but Josephus says it was 30,000 that died of the Philistines that day. That's a good size. That's a huge victory. That's really big. But you look at Saul's wars with the Ammonites, the Amalekites, his own Philistine wars. He kind of outdoes David. So in a sense, this is kind of a little bit exaggerated. It's not quite true. So what do you do when someone gets promoted over you and you've actually done more than them? You've been at it a little longer. You're the one with the seniority. And yet everybody's just oohing and awing. I'll bet it's a little bit like, you know, with New York Jets here with Tim Tebow coming up. And Mike, what does Mark Sanchez do? You know, and everybody's saying, oh, Tebow. Now, don't get me wrong. I love Tim Tebow. And actually, Tim Tebow is a perfect example for us to follow because he wants to be a team player. He says he's going to support him. But what does Mark Sanchez think? You know, same kind of a taste, same kind of a flavor here. What do you do when other people get promoted ahead of you? Verse 8, well, Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him. I mean, he's king for Pete's sake. They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have only ascribed thousands. Now, what more can he have but the kingdom? He's mad. He's angry. He's mad. I mean, next thing you know, the kid's going to want the keys to the caddy. You know, what's with this? Great lessons here on jealousy, gang. How do you feel when God blesses someone else? John the Baptist had been used by God in a tremendous way. He drew all kinds of crowds. Thousands would come out to hear John preaching in the wilderness. And there came a day when the crowds migrated to another preacher. And it says in John 3:25, then there arose a dispute between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purification. And they came to John and said to him, Rabbi, he who was with you beyond the Jordan, that's Jesus, to whom you have testified, behold, he is baptizing and all are coming to him. John answered and said, a man can receive nothing unless it has been given to him from heaven. You yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but I have been sent before him. He who has the bride is the bridegroom. You know, the people are the bride. The one who has all the people, that's the bridegroom. That's the husband. But the friend of the bridegroom, the best man who stands and hears him, rejoices greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. Therefore, this joy of mine is fulfilled. John's saying, I'm like the best man. I'm not the groom. I'm not the head guy. He must increase, but I must decrease. I love that. I love that heart of John's. In reality, we need to be in the place where the good of God's kingdom is what matters. That's what counts. The good of God's kingdom. If God begins to work in the life of somebody else, we got to work at being glad for them. You know, 1 Corinthians 13 says, love does not envy. Romans 12:15 says, rejoice with those who rejoice. I need to be willing to be more like Jonathan and load the other person up with whatever they need. You know, but a new pastor comes into town and his church starts getting bigger than mine. I'm not going to be a happy camper about it. I'm not going to be a happy camper about it, not at all. I'll tell you, I'm probably going to be more like Saul and stand back and start throwing javelins instead of loading somebody up. Saul seems to be a great example of someone who has boatloads of insecurity. He's got boatloads of insecurity. And he's going to develop resentment against David. Resentment that's going to bubble over and cause all kinds of trouble. I think, you know, I just can't help but, and maybe just because I know how insecure I am, and I am, and I can't help but see that in Saul. I don't know if you think of that when you read about Saul. That's what I think. I think, man, this guy is so insecure, and now he's getting resentful against David. Gang, if we don't learn to deal with resentment, it will boil over and cause all kinds of trouble. All kinds of trouble. And we don't even quite see it. We don't understand why we're saying such mean things about that other person. Verse 9, so Saul eyed David from that day forward. I'm keeping my eye on you, kid. And it happened on the next day that the distressing spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied inside the house. The distressing spirit shows up again. This demon thing, this evil thing. And it says he prophesied. Now, you have to understand the ancient word for prophecy means to bubble over. And so, in a good way, when God's spirit is on you, you bubble over with things from God. Well, this is not the good spirit. This is a bad spirit. And so he's bubbling over with bad stuff. New Living Translation says it overwhelms, the tormenting spirit from God overwhelms Saul, and he began to rave in his house like a madman. So he's going nuts. So it says David played music in his hand as at other times, but there was a spear in Saul's hand. David does what he always does. He picks up his guitar and starts playing little praise songs, you know, and, you know, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And he's doing his beautiful stuff. And Saul's got this thing in his hand, and Saul cast the spear, for he said, I will pin David to the wall. But David escaped his presence twice. He tosses his spear. Gang, there is it's not a coincidence that Saul's resentment and his jealousy moves into this evil spirit working in him. It's not a coincidence. There's a connection there. Because, gang, when we don't deal with these things, with resentments, It's like we're installing a handle on our soul that, you know, Satan's can't possess you, but man, he can grab a hold of you and spin you around and throw you on the ground and make you do stupid things because I don't deal with my fleshly attitudes. You know, it might be jealousy over what's happening in somebody else's life. We're running out of time, so I'm not going to read through Acts chapter 5. Ananias and Sapphira, they were jealous of these people who were giving stuff to the church and getting all this pats on the back, and they wanted some of that pats on the back. And their stupid jealousy led them into trouble. It's Ephesians 4 has another handhold. It says, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath or give place to the devil. Don't give the devil a foothold. Anger can do it. Resentment. Anger, jealousy. Now Saul was afraid of David because the Lord, verse 12, was with him but had departed from Saul. Therefore Saul removed him from his presence but made him captain over 1,000, and he went out and came in before the people. Now he doesn't trust the kid, so he's going to put him in charge of an army thing, and he's going to send him out because maybe he'll get killed one day. And I can't fire the kid because everybody loves him. I'll be in trouble if I fire the kid. And David behaved wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Therefore, when Saul saw that he behaved wisely, he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before him. You know what? We'll do a silly, goofy thing. Let's just stop here. We're out of time. And we'll pick up with David marrying his first wife next week. Let's stand and pray.